Friday, February the 28th, found us returning red-eyed and weary about 8:30 a.m. from Florida, stumbling into the house and getting into bed with piled up all around me the art file, that is, everything having to do with the Society of the Preservation of the White House and the Fine Arts Committee, the Painting Committee, Mrs. Kennedy's letter to me, the whole history of it that I've been concerned with since the last of November. The reason is I wanted to brief myself before I went to see Mrs. Kennedy at 11 o'clock. Armed with some and not enough knowledge, but a pretty sure intent of what I wanted, I set out a few minutes before 11 and arrived at her Georgetown house, which is a mellow, pretty pink brick, to find outside three or four, I think, policemen in uniforms and a few interested neighbors congregated on the sidewalk. I guess there will always be people around our house waiting to see the coming and going. She greeted me sweetly on the inside. There were no children around. We went into the big drawing room in which there was a small fire. It was really quite cold. It lacks a long way yet of being complete. Even she, who knows so much and does so much, can't bring a house to the perfection of warmth and finish in a few weeks' time. We had a cup of coffee, and I told her that I'd had so many conferences with Clark Clifford about how best we could preserve and carry on and make permanent the wonderful work that she and her committee had done at the White House, and that what we had decided was the essence of his best thinking after having been run past one or two of my friends, and that we had decided on the Society for the Preservation of the White House, which would have the following regular members: the head of the Smithsonian, who is now Mr. Ripley since Carmichael's gone, the head of the Park Services, Mr. Herzog, the head of the Fine Arts Commission, Bill Walton, the director of the National Gallery of Art, John Walker, and here within the White House itself, the curator, who is at present Mr. Ketchum, and that most important man of all, the usher, Mr. J.B. West. And then, and this is where she most importantly came in, there would be public members. I'm not sure whether I mentioned the number of public members, but I told her that Clark had said that she had agreed to be one of the public members, and that would be the most important thing that could happen to this committee. And I was so happy that she had, but I wanted to hear it from her rather than just go ahead and make the announcement and rely upon Clark's word. That is the way I would want somebody to do me. I would like them to come to see me myself about it. She said, yes, she would. And I told her that I intended to follow her suggestion to ask Mr. DuPont, the chairman of her Fine Arts Committee, and Mr. Fosberg, the chairman of her Paintings Committee, and what two finer ones could there possibly be, and I do so hope that they will serve. And then I was going to have a Texas woman, and then I was going to look around among my friends and find a few others. She was very agreeable, very sweet, rather vague. I had the odd feeling that I was doing more of the talking than she was, and somehow that wasn't entirely reassuring. I said what is very true, that any committee is only as good as the most knowledgeable and determined and vigorous person on it. There must be somebody who is the flame, who furnishes the inspiration. And really, I think that she would be the natural one to do this. And I want her to, and I hope she will. I also told her, remembering very well what Clark had said to me, that he had had quite a spirited discussion with her about the complete cutting off of her own Fine Arts Committee, that I did hope to continue, in addition, an advisory committee and pick up from it some of the people who had been on her Fine Arts Committee and Painting Committee, because I did not want to lose that reservoir of talent and knowledge and goodwill and contribution. I didn't want to lose it to the future of the White House, and I didn't want to lose it for my husband's administration. And even if the job was 90% done, history will keep on moving. Other people will come and live and depart here. And if we can do anything to keep it on an even keel and to perpetuate what she has done, that is my great ambition. I thought it was a successful enough meeting, and after a couple of cups of coffee and presenting her with the four coins, the first of the four to be minted in the Philadelphia Mint with the head of President Kennedy on them, one for herself, one for each of the two children, and one which I said I hoped, I thought perhaps, that she might like to send on to Mrs. Rose Kennedy. I said goodbye and came away. The rest of the day was spent in signing mail, making decisions, handling a lot of tedious things, realizing that the arrival dates on some of the letters was so many days or even weeks ago that I cringed to think about it. And then a little rest. But it's almost impossible for me to go to sleep in the middle of the day. And I found, suddenly, to my delight, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that there were John and Nellie out in the outside hall. They'd only been there a few minutes, but nobody had told me. So I immediately wrapped my robe around me and went out to sit with them until Lyndon could join us. He'd asked them to come over for a cup of coffee. It was snowing just blindly, and it was beautiful to look out the window, which I was so glad I'd had washed a day or two before. And the snow was just falling softly. It was a wonderland to look at. John and Nellie said they had to leave in about an hour to catch the plane. So then we decided they'd better call and see whether a plane was going to fly in that weather. It proved that it wasn't going to. Lyndon and I insisted that they spend the night. We said, we'll put you in the Queen's room, and we'll put Bill Stinson upstairs, and we'll ask the Walter Jenkins to come over and have dinner with us, and there'll be just us, and it'll be such fun. It looked like there was no possibility for them to get out until the next morning. And so they did spend the night, and I had that same sort of delightful feeling that one gets at the ranch when the river rises, and you cannot get across, and the only thing to do is to sit there and relax. And if you're spending the time with people that you care very much about, then what could be better? It's like being lost on a desert island. I got Mr. Ketchum up, and he and Nellie and I walked around, and he told us a lot about the furniture and the paintings, especially in the oval room. And then when he left, Nellie and I cuddled up on the sofa, and she reminisced about the day of November the 22nd and her feelings about the four people that rode in the car that day. But those are her memories and not mine. John had gone over to be with Lyndon at the office. The Walter Jenkins had said they'd come. We rehashed the private lives of a lot of our friends, and it was just like old times. And she told me about the house that they're building in Floresville. On that trip to Europe, they had picked up a vast number of things to put in it. And Nellie talked about how she thought there ought to be at least a small miniature, just some little remembrance of each of the first ladies who had been in the White House. And I was reminded of that morning when Mrs. Kennedy had said that there were not more than portraits of five first ladies in the White House, she thought, and how she did not see any reason for there being one of the first ladies. And I had told her that, above all, there certainly should be one of herself. Walter Jenkins raised the question with John that he had tried to get him to run against our Republican senator when the time rolled around, but that John had declined. And John said, yes, if I feel like I do now, I certainly won't want to. No need to try to keep on settling people's problems or trying to when they don't want you to, and when they don't like the solutions. There was a certain weariness, even a slightly acid quality in his opinion of politics at the moment. But it'll be a great disappointment to me if John doesn't stay in there, at least through two terms as governor, and then make a try for Tower's seat in the Senate when the time comes. And I'll bet he will. But the most important thing of all to me was to feel that I enjoyed them and they enjoyed us just as much as any of us ever had. And of course, when Linda Bird came in, she's just one short jump from being in love with John, as are so many women. And she just oohed and aahed over him. While we were sitting around, an odd thing happened. We heard a loud thump, almost a crash. And we began going in the direction of the noise. It was in the yellow room, and a picture to the right of the mantel, the one of Boston Harbor, had fallen to the floor, with no damage to the picture but considerable damage to the frame, pieces of which were lying around in fist-size chunks on the floor. Tomorrow morning it'll be a job to get it cleaned up and some replacement put up before the hordes of the Houston Symphony come invading us. All in all, the day has been one of those unexpected gifts from the gods.